Welcome to the Godfathers of Podcasting. Now, in case y'all didn't know, they've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. Archives of this show are available on every major podcast provider, and you can find video archives, merch, and more on their website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. Now, here are your hosts, two guys who have been broadcasting online since 1996, the Godfathers of Podcasting themselves, Donnie DeSilva and Chris Tidwell.
Hello, hello, hello. It is Thursday, April 25th. And like the introduction says, my name is Donnie. And that man right there next to me, he is the Paul to my Ringo, the Gene Simmons to my Peter Chris. He is the Bono to my Adam Clayton. That is Chris Tidwell. What's up,
Tid? I'm so glad you didn't say the Paul to your Vin, because that would have been way worse.
I just took the lesser of every supergroup I could think of.
Not Paul Walker and Vin Diesel.
I mean, that didn't end well. I don't want to go there.
Either did he.
Oh, Jesus. How's your week been, my friend?
One day at a time, sweet Jesus. One day at a time. Yeah.
That sounds like you're just coming to grips with the fact that you're closer to the end of the ride.
Well, I mean, aren't we all?
Yeah.
Aren't we all? Just, you know, floating around on this big flat earth, wondering what's going on with the birds and why they're not real. All that other crazy right. Wackiness.
Oh my God. It's so funny you said that. Somebody who I've known for a long time. Posted something on Instagram a week or two ago.
Okay.
And she literally said, and I messaged her and I said, "You're joking, right? Like this is a prank. This is a rib." She goes, "No." She said she is now 100% convinced that the conspiracy theory that seagulls are not real and are government controlled drones to spy on civilians. And she said, the evidence is you've never seen a baby seagull or a seagull egg because they're full-grown adult drones. This is a person who I used to think was really intelligent. And I said, you're ribbing me, right?
Listen, says, I'll go no. you one step further. I'll go you one step further. None of the birds are real. And when you see them, and when you see them lined up on the electrical lines... You know what I mean? How yeah. they all land on there? They're actually recharging. That's the work. Yeah. No?
Batteries are low.
Yeah. They're like the Teslas of the animals.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable.
Speaking of Tesla, I saw a great retweet by former guest on this show, comedian Rush Kazi. I don't remember who the original person was, but she retweeted it. And it was commenting on Elon Musk recently coming out saying that we don't need laws that ensure accuracy in posts on social media. So it says, the post was, Elon Musk, dead at age 55, says that we do not need laws that ensure accuracy on the internet.
I mean, could you imagine if there weren't laws about accuracy? Our guest this week would be in so much trouble for stuff that she would come up with in her writings.
We will get to her momentarily. And before we do, I am so stoked. What? If any of you follow me on Instagram...
Nobody.
If you do, you saw yesterday, I got really excited. I did an unboxing and shared with everyone some product that got sent to us from a new sponsor. I mentioned this new sponsor last week and they are now officially here. I want to welcome Black Bork to the Godfathers of Podcasting. And what is Black Bork? Well, Black Bork, this really cool company. They've got offices all over the world, actually. And they sent me, Tid, like, hold on, where's my camera? Here it is. They sent me like 4 or 5 of these boxes. Okay. And like, it's got the name of the company. It's got my name on the box embossed. Right. And like there, it says, who are these Black Bork people? Which I love. It's so espionage or something. So what they make are hats. And I love hats, right? But the cool thing about these hats, they have so many different ones. They have like, it's a white one. There's this one here, which is like camel and black. They have like this one here that's like all white. But the best part, I like this one too. This one's like pink and charcoal gray. The really cool thing about these hats is, I love this, man. The front patch can actually be removed and you can replace it with any patch that you want. And you can get custom patches. They have hundreds of them on their website. You can get custom patches. You can make your own. If you have your own logo, your own design, whatever it may be. And then every single time you put a new patch on the hat, you're essentially creating a brand new hat. And the really cool part about it is it does not look like it's stuck on there with Velcro. It looks like it's actually a cohesive part of the hat, like it's supposed to be there. It actually looks like it's embroidered right on the hat. It's such a high quality product. I cannot stress this enough. And like I said, the experience, getting it in the mail with a personalized box, they send you these really cool drawstring bags with your order as well.
And that's what you should put over your head.
These cool metal keychains and all kinds of stuff, man. Like, they are a company that believes in really strong customer service and really, really great, craftsmanship and product. And actually they have they have a new product that's coming out, where the patches themselves, Tid, you can get them made out of like diamonds and 24 karat gold. And so those ones will run you like $6,000-$10,000 per patch. And one of the guys from the company was saying to me, yeah, we're selling those to like celebrities and high-end.
Do they come with some kind of security feature, or just going to have people running up snatching patches off of dudes' heads?
You buy a 24 karat diamond and a 24 karat gold and diamond patch, and then you have to hire Tid to follow you around to make sure that you're going to be okay. Go to blackborkusa.com. Black Bork, B-O-R-K, USA.com. They ship all over the world. They have an amazing collection. Oh, I didn't even show you this one. Look, they even have toques, or as our American friends would say, beanies. And again, same thing, right? You can replace the patch with anything you want. This one is the one my kid picked out. It's like the Subway logo, but it says no way. So go ahead, go to blackborkusa.com. Check out whatever you want. They're sending me even more product. If there's something here that you really like, you can send us an email, info@godfathersofpodcasting.com, or you can DM me on Instagram. Let me know which hat, which patch you love. Tell me why you want it. And if you give me a good story, I'll just send it to you. Okay. And we got tons more too. We got like camouflage, and we've got hot pink. We got this one here that's like all camel. We got tons of them, and they're sending me more. So which one do you want, Tid?
Yeah, sounds like you got lots of them. I ain't got a single one over here. So I'm just gonna
keep it. What do you want?
I don't know.
I can give you this one, the maroon and black, that says Donnie's always right.
I want the same box. How about that?
We will hook you up. Don't you worry. Go to blackborkusa.com. Get your stuff today, because you're going to like it. It's super high quality. look, I don't shill like this for products unless I absolutely believe in them. So please go check them out. On that note, Tid,
yeah.
Speaking of super high quality, I was gonna try and like say something mean, but I'm not going to because she is super high quality. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the big hello. And let's please bring her in. She is a thespian, an author. She's a TV host, a promoter, an entrepreneur. She's a coffee lover. She's a live sports attender. And of course, she's a hell of a writer. For more than 25 years, she's been one of the top music journalists in the business who writes for Billboard, but you've seen her work in Rolling Stone, the Huffington Post, the Toronto Star, the Sun, the National Post, and dozens of others. She sat down and interviewed basically everyone who's anyone in the music world. Eminem, Timberlake, Gwen Stefani, Gene Simmons, Kurt Cobain, 50 Cent, Ice-T, Eddie Vedder, and hundreds more. In 2010, she was involved in probably one of the coolest projects ever when she partnered with Farley Flex and created an animated anti-racism PSA called The Girl with Pinhead Parents. It featured voiceover work from former NBA star Chris Bosh and iconic singers like Nelly Furtado, Julie Black, Lights, and others. In 2023, she made massive headlines with her article about Adrian Strong, an executive with a label who apparently used his position to lure and assault multiple women. We will talk about that and more tonight with the woman who told me last time she was on this show 9 times how ugly I am. I wasn't counting because that'd be weird, but it was 9 times. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got my notes written on my wrist in case you thought something was amiss. Gotta come correct or she will boo and hiss. She can talk all that trash, but you know I'll dismiss. Now do the Euro double cheek kiss and give it up to the very talented Miss Karen Bliss.
Very nice. Can I fact check?
Oh, 100% do.
What did I miss?
There is so much wrong in what you said.
Was there? Okay, I blame ChatGPT.
I really hope you didn't use that. Because when I throw my name in there, just talking about that today, it says I've interviewed David Bowie. Maybe one day.
You haven't interviewed David Bowie?
No. Anyway, so let's go back. So first of all, I love how you talked about Girl with Pinhead Parents and talked about And Others, because let's just say for the record that Gian Gomeshi was the voice of the radio announcer and Jacob Hogarth was one of the co-stars. So, yeah.
We don't talk about Bruno.
Can't be promoting that anymore. that was before their, the allegations and charges against them. What else did you say? Billboard, yes. Rolling Stone, yes. I guess I wrote for Huffington Post. I don't. You just picked a weird assortment. I'm like, did I?
You can. Yeah, you contributed at some point or another. I'm not saying you were on.
All right. You could have asked and I would have told you. So I have, first of all, you put it out there that if we just say what hat we want. So I want the,
yes.
I want the one with the diamonds.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't have that for you, Karen.
I'm sorry you didn't put any restrictions on what you said. Don't make it about false advertising. So I'll take the one with the diamonds.
Also, I literally said of the ones I have here. I literally said that.
I love that you did an unboxing. Are you 16?
Yes.
You know how those go, right? You know that.
First time I've ever done one.
First admire the box
for
5 minutes. Look at the packaging. Oh, I love the packaging. Look, it's got letters on here. And then you turn it and then you have to, like, you know, did you go into the box and then, oh, it's got tissue paper. This is so nice. I love this tissue paper. And that, like, and I love the logo with the, those things are insane. And then you have to hold up the product like this against your hand.
This is my friend Karen Bliss, everyone, who I've known for almost 30 years. Every time we talk, she just finds ways to rip me apart. So, Karen, let me explain to you. my child is almost 12 years old, and all he likes to do is watch YouTube, and he watches people play video games, and he watches unboxing videos. So when I got these boxes, he's like, do an unboxing video. And I'm like, what am I going to do? Be a bad parent? Because Karen Bliss is going to get irked? It's
amusing. I'm going to go watch.
It was fun.
First of all, congrats that this is show number 173, because I think I was probably on show 3.
I think you were show 13, episode 13, I think you were on.
Lucky 13.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're down a human, I see.
What's that?
You're down a human.
Yes. That's right. Well, yes, since the last time you were with us, of course, our bro Danny O was the third member of the cast, and Dan left to focus on his new album. Of course, the single that dropped a few weeks ago is the new theme song of this show that played off the top, his song with Blessed Like We, which is fan-freaking-tastic, that song. It's still getting rave reviews. And Dan just dropped another single. I think it was like a week ago, Ted. He dropped the third single off this album. Yeah. And so that album is going to be dropping on May 10th, called Vigilante. And pre-orders are available on dan-e-o.com. It's amazing, Karen. And I'm sure you see this all the time. And maybe this is a nice transition to talk about your world. But I was having this conversation with Dan off air and on air, because he was on here a couple weeks ago talking about that new single and the upcoming album. This is a guy who literally splashed on the music scene when he was 13 years old, winning a battle rap competition on Electric Circus. And he's been putting out music ever since. And I think now is the best he's ever done. Like the song Like We that he dropped with Blessed, I think is the best work of his entire career. When do you see that happen? Like, can you think of other examples off the top of your head of an artist who's, you know, sort of floated around and had their core fan base, and then 20, 25, almost 30 years into their career, it's like, holy shit, they just hit a new gear. They just hit a new level in terms of their creative ability. Like, it's pretty wild.
Yeah, I'm on a quiz show now, right?
Well, you are the music encyclopedia.
Throw out names? I don't like, okay, I don't know.
David Bowie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a unique thing, right?
Yeah, he's super talented.
Yeah. Talented it's guy. It's ridiculous. So I'm officially starting the I already messaged some friends that are involved with the Junos, and I'm starting the campaign, get Dan a Juno, because he deserves one, man.
Don't like, think it works that way, but good luck.
Don't care. We're starting a campaign. They campaign for Oscars. We are campaigning for a Juno. That is what's happening. Maybe they need a hat.
Submit the album. It goes through a process. But you do you. I love the fact that you only ask me to be on when someone's dropped out. I feel like an
alternate. Not true. Not true. Today you.
Like your
today
name.
You're a last second.
Stand by if someone ditches you for a wedding. That's how I feel.
Today you are a last second fill in. That is. You are a last second fill in. However, if you remember. Maybe what's that?
Character. Who am I filling in for?
Who dropped out? You want me to call the guy out?
Well, you don't have to tell me specifically, but like the genre, like what area.
He's a broadcaster in the city of Toronto, comedian and a broadcaster. But your statement is not correct. I do not only contact you when we're stuck at the last second. I can go through our messages and I will pull out messages where I said, hey, Karen, want to join us on the podcast? And you're like, I'd really rather not. What?
How do you even know that's my tone?
It's fully your tone. That's always your tone.
Emoji for that?
Yeah. Karen's resting face emoji is the one with the straight line for a mouth. What? It's just like never impressed.
Why do you bring up the car towing thing again that you're holding against me for like all these years, and that's why we have this rapport?
Is that why this is our dynamic?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, for anyone who missed episode 13, we shared the story that apparently Karen Bliss had forgotten, which is when we were hanging out many moons ago. I was still a teenager, by the way. And she was, I don't know, in her late 30s or something. And,
okay. nice revisionist history there, pal.
And we went to, I can't remember, we went the Horseshoe or the Velvet.
I'm a teenager to the Horseshoe in my
journey. Yeah. Well, I was legal to get in. I was 19. Okay. But
pick up your own stuff.
We went to one of those spots to go see some live music or something, because that's what Karen does. And I think I parked some spot on Queen Street. And she told me
you were hounding me when we worked at Virtually Canadian Iceberg Media, where we both did radio shows, and you kept wanting to take me out. And then
that's not true.
Just desserts.
That's 100%. That's 100% fake news. If you want to really throw it out there, what happened was I was single at the time. And Strombolopoulos and Jeff Merrick were pushing you to go hang out with me. I had nothing to do with it. I wasn't even part of the conversation.
I don't even remember that whatsoever.
Yeah. And I'm convinced that you went and hung out with me just so Strombolopoulos would talk to you again.
I don't even remember him.
Anyway, this is my friend Karen Bliss.
Anyway, he got his car towed, and apparently it traumatized him. That's what you.
No, it didn't traumatize me.
Hey, you're totally changing the story.
I said that I was
years, and you were traumatized that you were out with me. You didn't have money. I remember.
No, I didn't.
That, and I had to lend you the money to get your car out. Anyway,
these are all true statements. I was 19 years old. I had no money. Are you kidding? I had nothing. I was a kid.
Whose car?
It was my car.
Was this the same car that you locked the keys in Montreal? Was this the same car that broke down on the side of the road on the way to Guelph?
Not that one.
You had to have your dad come and pick you up? Is this the same car?
Not that one.
Oh, different? Oh my God. There's a pattern. There's a pattern
for
you in cars, right?
That was a funny story too. Tid and I were, this is going back to like 1996. It was one of the first times he and I were ever going out on the road to cut interviews together. And we were heading to an event to go get some tape, and we're in my car. Cause at the time Tid didn't even drive. He didn't have a car to break down. So I had to drive my jalopy. That's right. So I had to drive my jalopy from Toronto out to the middle of nowhere in Guelph. And somewhere on Stone Road, the car overheated and broke down. And neither one of us had a cell phone. There's nothing around us within walking distance. I end up not knowing what to do. I walk for about 45 minutes to the nearest Canadian Tire. I call my dad, who's in Markham. He drives from Markham to Guelph. For anyone not in the Southern Ontario area, that's a good hour and a half to 2 hour drive.
About an hour and a half.
He makes the drive out there and can't find us because Guelph has two roads called Stone Road. There's two different roads called Stone Road. So he was in a complete, he eventually found us, bailed us out, and all he did was laugh. And then he and Tidwell thought it was hilarious. And I'm sitting there thinking, great, we just missed all these interviews that we were supposed to get. So yes, I suck with cars. Are you guys happy? Can we move on now?
Okay. Ask anything. Bring it on.
Thank you. Thank you. Um, Yeah. So listen, you are someone that I feel like you're always out doing stuff, whether it's attending a live sporting event, whether it's at a live concert. I'm curious to know, at this point of your life, how many times are you out at a live concert and it's not work related? You're literally just there to enjoy the music.
All the time. I don't do concert reviews, but I'm not out that much.
It feels like you are. But you don't do concert reviews anymore, but don't you do like, don't you use that as an opportunity to get some time with the artist or something to that effect?
No. Just going to rock and roll.
What's that?
Just going to enjoy live music, which I've been doing since I was 16.
I love that she's just fucking stonewalling you on all of these answers. It's great. I love it.
Let me just say he's going by social media.
I know. It's great. This is such a train wreck. I fucking love it, Karen.
I just post a photo like sitting on my couch and then people won't think I'm out all the time. Like I could just like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or couch, 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 Blue Jay game, couch, 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 Black Girls at Massey, you know, like.
Okay. Yeah. So here's the question. Then how often do you like to get content to write, because that's your job. And how often do you have to leave home to be able to do your job then?
Okay. Well, right now it's really tough. It's never been harder for me as a music journalist in this country, to the point where I don't know if I'm going to continue because I cannot make an adult living. It's really very, very hard, especially in this country. No one wants to pay. We don't have enough outlets. They've all disappeared. I worked 2 years on a major investigation on an alleged sexual predator in Canada. I did it for Billboard in America. They were incredible. They had their two lawyers. They got me a Canadian lawyer. It was a lot of work. It was extremely stressful. It was a huge learning experience. And it came out and I discovered that a couple of people from the advertising world had licensed the name Billboard Canada and were starting it up here and didn't want me involved or contact me or that kind of thing. So I kind of lost my gig there because they now are handling the Canadian industry news, even though they don't have the same kind of experience that I have had for many decades. So I lost that. I lost writing for FYI Music News because they bought FYI Music News. I had already lost my funding for Samaritan Mag, which was my online magazine about giving back. So I lost that. And now I'm like hustling. So it's, you know, not a great time to be a music journalist, but I'm trying and I'm hustling. And, you know, people also have this view like, yes, I covered the Junos for Variety, but I'm not getting paid $2,000 to cover the Junos for Variety. Right. I don't want to tell you what I get paid, but it's not a lot. So, you know, I need to write 20 to 30 articles a month to make an adult living. But people have this, you know, because, you know, as Donnie thinks, I'm out like every night when really I'm not. It's the same with an article. Like they've seen it. So they're like, oh, I saw your piece in such and such. I saw your piece here. So they maybe think it's more regular, or maybe I'm staff, or they don't really understand how it works. Right. But it's just one little piece, you know. So that's the reality right now.
If they've pushed you out of Billboard Canada, which apparently is a brand new thing, where are they going? Like, what journalists could they possibly be using that are going to have more credibility? And that's a word.
They have a great, you know, editor. He's a great writer. He was at Now Magazine. His work is great. But I'm saying that I've been a trade writer since I was 20. So I have those relationships and people trust me, I think, and tell me things about the industry, whether it's takeovers, signings, you know, other cool ventures. And you don't know what you don't know. So, you know, I'm in constant contact with many of these people because we've all come up together and now they're managing some of the biggest acts in the world, you know, or they're running the biggest companies in Canada and sometimes in the industry. And these are my pals, you know? So again, like, you don't know what you don't know. So yeah, they're covering stuff. Their pieces are great. They're good writers. They've got some young writers, but it's not, there's a lot of industry stories that are missing. I'm not going to beg someone to hire me. There were many, many people that said you should hire her. I don't want a full-time job at one particular publication, but just like continue contributing. But that didn't happen. So, you know, eventually I'm like, I got to figure it out myself, right? So that's sort of where I'm at right now.
Is the changing landscape in music journalism directly connected to the changing landscape in music? Like how the economics of music have changed so drastically?
It's been happening slowly, right? But everything became online. So the print publications disappeared. The ad revenue wasn't there supporting it. If you write for a print publication, a legit good publication, they will pay better. Could be a dollar a word. If you're writing online, they don't pay as much. You know, maybe 25 cents a word, 30 cents a word. If you're lucky, 50 cents a word. Doesn't, never, very rarely a buck a word. So, or it's per piece and there's no word count like that. And a lot of them have in America too. Like I like writing about Canadians for Americans, you know, it's always been my thing. I like, you know, to bring them that exposure. And, you know, there's a big, big difference. Like I'm not talking about other kinds of journalism in Canada. I'm talking about in the music world. Like I could not have done the piece on Adrian Strong with the outlets and the people that I work for or worked for in Canada. I wouldn't have felt comfortable. They don't have the experience or the know-how. It would have been a disaster. They don't have the money. They don't have the lawyers. They like, it just wouldn't have worked.
They would have been scared.
It wouldn't have been done, you know, unless I did it for a McLean's or a Toronto Star, you know, but right. For the music publications that I write for, not a chance.
They would have been too scared to touch it.
Well, they don't have the knowledge and the know-how. Like this was a whole other level. This was real journalism, something I'd right. never experienced. Like I just interview musicians and, you know, go to concerts for a living. Like that is not a tough job, you know, to string some sentences together, you know, based on an interview. But
it's really tough sometimes for me to string a sentence together. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there.
It's true. since you made reference to the article, to the piece that you did, which by the way was incredible. The amount of work that went into it was amazing. And you know how much I love complimenting you, not so much, but it was excellent, excellent work. For anyone out there who has not seen the piece, we will link it up on godfathersofpodcasting.com so you can take a look at it in its entirety. But the piece talks about Adrian Strong, who was a former executive within the...
At that time, he was the president of...
Right. I'm saying today, former.
Today's former, yeah.
Right. At the time, he was an executive with a label. And
the radio tracking company. Would you like me to
tell the story? My bad.
He was a radio director, so he worked songs to
DMD. Right. He was with DMD.
Yeah.
So the story goes on to say that there was apparently a conversation between him and a female artist where he was promising to help advance her career. And this turned into a trip down to the United States, where apparently over the course of a day and a half or so, he had her drugged, assaulted, did all sorts of vile things to her. And there is talk in the article of a couple of other victims of this piece of human garbage. What was the motivation when you started this 2-year journey to put this piece together? Was it because of the fact that Noir, the victim that was mentioned, was it because she came forward in this sort of Me Too statement and then you decided to take action? Did someone approach you and say, I need your help? What was the driving force between to get you started on this?
The driving force was she made a very brave post on Instagram in November 2019. It had many details in it. I didn't know who she was. I've known Adrian a couple of decades. I went through his Facebook. I found, you know, some corroborating things like Hilton Head mentions, Marriott mentions. I also found a status. And this was an allegation. She said that this had happened in 2009. So she was coming forward 10 years later. Mm-hmm. And so I found a status where he had written Noir is the New Black, N-O-I-R-E, which is how she as an artist had spelled her name. That was the same weekend she alleged that she was raped. And anyway, it was a very long process. And I tried to get the story at that time for Billboard. I couldn't. There was some sabotaging going on. And then COVID hit. And he kept getting a lot of work. He had major, major clients, Deadmau5, The Weeknd, many, many others. And people were still, I should say, had spoken to another woman off the record who told me her story. So I knew there was something there. And Noir also was gonna get the documents from the police and the hospital records. So, you know, I knew there was a story there, and I just asked my editor if I could try again because I didn't have any work, and I just dove in and I built the story from the Instagram post.
Did you receive threats? Did you receive any threats to shut this down?
No, because I actually kept it very quiet. I didn't tell anyone. I wanted to protect the women. That was my number one priority all along, still is. And the only time I was getting a bit scared was a year ago now, actually, when I reached out to him, when the lawyers had said, okay, this is ready. Now you have to go to him. We have a law in Canada, the Responsible Journalism Act. And Kevin Donovan from The Star, who has written extensively podcast books about the Sherman murder case. He was extremely helpful. I did reach out to a number of people for advice. So when I reached out to him, I was trying to get an interview to get his side. And he kept delaying. So then I had to send sort of this, you don't send the story, but you break it down. So it's, you know, is Karen Bliss on the Godfather's podcast? You know, like some are very basic, like you can answer that, right. You know? He ultimately didn't really answer any of the questions, but it was like going on and on and on. But it was a scary time. It was a pretty scary time.
When you were doing the story, were you ever worried that there was going to be any kind of blowback onto you after this all came out? Because obviously it's very secretive, and you know what I mean? And this is a person who's inside of the industry that you're in as well, inside of that music industry. Was there, you know what I mean? Was there ever any kind of, man, you had, you know, any fear on that end for you?
Absolutely. I said it a number of times to my editors. This might kill my career. I'm well aware of it. Honestly, I couldn't not do the story. Like, there's no way I could continue on in life or even as a journalist and not pursue the story. Because I believe the women, you know, maybe I shouldn't say that as a journalist, but I believe the women and their stories were consistent. The women did not know each other. There were patterns. Not patterns with all the women, but like maybe with two of the women and not the two, like some kind of corroborating types of things. And, you know, he had every right to answer every question. He had a lawyer. He did send his evidence. And I put it all in the article. Everything he sent us is in the article. So he told his side. I told the women's side, people can make up their own minds, but I couldn't not do it. And I'm, you know, if I don't know if that's why what's happening with me career-wise is happening. I don't think so. I think it's just a coincidence. I know that there are some parties that are, that I have kind of been persona non grata. I don't care because I know I'm right, you know? They have to live.
Was there anything? Was there anything in the material that Adrian Strong and his team of, you know, attorneys, was there anything they supplied you with or supplied your legal support with that gave you pause and said, maybe he's not completely lying. Maybe there's something here. Or was there, was none of his evidence exonerating him in any way, shape or form?
It's in the article, so you can.
I'm just asking your opinion.
All I have to say is that Billboard is a major U.S. outlet. With Penske has a legal team. Billboard has legal. They got me a Canadian top lawyer recommended by Kevin Donovan, and they went through the article, every single line. Every line, every word. And they went back to me dozens of times, get this, get that. What does this mean? Do you have this? Can you corroborate that? And they would not have printed it. He's not a big star. It's Canada. They would have killed the story. Like, you know, they're not going to jeopardize their, you know, integrity for me. For this story, you know, it's not like some big artist. So they stood by me, you know, through a lot. And I can't thank them enough. They are the top in the business. And I wouldn't have been able to do it here.
How long is that process from the time that you finish that article, you turn it into them, and then they go back and forth? How long is it before that article actually comes out?
It was very frustrating, but I don't turn it in like that. You know, we use Google Docs. There's, you know, questions in the margin, right. Me going back. Maybe them changing something and me going, nope, that's not how it worked, because I was using very specific words because I was the conduit for the women. Mm-hmm. So they are telling me the story. I know those stories. I know everything that happened that they allege. It's almost like you have PTSD as a woman hearing women tell these stories. And over again, I feel like I was there. I know those stories. So I'm the one that can read the story. And when there's a change, I can say, no, that's not what happened, mm-hmm. you know? And yeah, it took a very long time. There's things not in the piece. There's corroboration I had to get, or the women had to get, you know, their friends, or some, like, it's, you have, with a piece like this, what's very important is that you speak to someone. The corroboration is a person they told at that time. So it's not someone telling, like saying like, oh yeah, he did this 13 years ago. It's no, I was just there. And they call their roommate, they tell their cousin, they tell a parent. you know, a coworker. So I had to get all that. I had to get the documents. You know, you look at any hospital record or police record, and it's, you know, you have prescriptions and you're like, what on earth does that even say? Right. You know, like, she, Noir went through a lot. It was a different time. She was not treated very well. And you can kind of see that in the documentation of what they thought. She's a very highly intelligent person. She's quite eccentric, very talkative. And she also would come right out and say, he's Jabba the Hutt, I'm Princess Leia. You know, like that, those types of comments, I guess, weren't favorable to her in the eyes of the, I'm assuming, the police officers. You know, they felt that she had a high opinion of herself. That has no bearing at all on what she alleges happened. It should have been investigated, but they didn't think that the case could be prosecuted. There's also a jurisdiction issue because she's from here. He's from here. Mm-hmm. It happened in America. She came back here. She went to, you know, the Ottawa hospital. She went to the Peel police. She didn't go in Charleston. You know, that's a mess. I don't know how you navigate through that. Maybe they can't be bothered. Maybe, like, I can't answer for them from 13 years ago. What I can say is, she has been consistent with her story. His name is throughout those documents, and it's similar. They wrote down some things that I feel were incorrect. Maybe they weren't paying attention or they misunderstood. But it's very hard to lie and maintain a lie 10 years later, 13 years later. It's actually not really possible because it never happened, so it's not in your conscience to regurgitate those same types of vivid details, but all the women have. So, you know, you don't forget, I imagine, something like that. Like, they, when you're drugged, yes, you're in and out, and that's accepted. But what I've come to understand is certain things are very prominent and other things are not. You know, I think it's just a different time now that, look, there's no statute of limitations in Canada. No. But you have to be really brave to put yourself through something like that.
If I remember correctly, when I read the piece, because I read it when it first came out, I read it twice when it first came out because I was so blown away by it. Obviously, noir is the focus of the piece. And there's references to, I believe, two other women that were not named. Were there others that you spoke to that were not part of this piece?
There were threads, like I spoke to, it's referenced in a couple of paragraphs. Like I spoke to some men who were either friends of women that had kind of stepped in to help or rescue their friends, female. So there were some things like that. And I, you know, I had about 100 messages. Today, I was at a music conference sitting at a table and someone I know in the industry said, oh, I want to tell you, thank you for doing that piece. That happens almost weekly. Anytime I'm in an industry setting, at least one person will bring it up. And it came out last July, late July. Mm-hmm. So, look, I'm glad I did it. I'm glad he's no longer working in the industry. Given the time span of these allegations and how long it's been going on, you know, I don't know. It scares me a little bit. Right?
Well, the interesting thing here is this is a person who, like you said, he was in the music industry for decades. And now if you Google his name, you can't find anything that doesn't refer to your story, right? Like his name is forever now linked to this expose, which is great.
But also, if you read the article, he would go on dating sites. His real name, which I did not know, is Nicholas.
Okay.
And these women met him as Nicholas. Look, I don't know. Like, he's been removed from one industry where there's easy access to young girls. Industry that is perceived to be very difficult to break in, but that doesn't mean there's not a whole other world out there of just, you know, women on dating sites.
You mentioned earlier, sorry, I was just going to ask, you mentioned earlier when we were talking about your animated piece, Jean Gomeshi, and obviously he had allegations against him and was canceled from the public eye as a result of those allegations, which for some miracle of legal three shell Monty, he was not convicted on those charges.
However, that's because, and it's very complicated in some of these situations, because there's a power dynamic.
Right.
There'll be admiration for someone, depending on, you know, how you met. And there's also sometimes a fear. Maybe the person has photos or videos and you don't want them to get out. So maybe there is an alleged assault, but then you maintain contact with that person. It can be, it's almost like a, I think they call it a trauma bond. There's so many complicated elements to these types of things. And that figured into why he wasn't ultimately convicted, right? Like, I don't know if you remember, but there were some emails where I forget what they said, but that it was, you know, the flattering emails to right. him after the alleged assaults. But, right. You know, I still get men typically saying to me, why are there no charges? Why are there no charges? If there's no charges, you know, I don't believe it. Like, let's see if the charges.
That was the next thing I wanted to ask you about was the negative feedback.
Well, just also, like, you know, why'd she wait to come forward? Or,
right.
You know, they're outrageous. You know, yeah, it's all the typical things, right? Like, they don't quite understand why someone, in Noir's case, it was that weekend, she never talked to him again. He actually phoned her and she contacted the police. And in the report, the police report, it says that the officer was going to go talk to him. Now, I can't find out if that ever happened. Believe me, I tried, but there were no charges. So a lot of the information is redacted to protect him. So I don't know if he was ever spoken to. I assume so, because his name is Nicholas in the reports often. Like, it says Adrian as well, but it also had, like, it was redacted, like his birth date and address or something. But his name's still in there. And yeah, so I don't know. Yeah.
I know Tid wants to jump in, but let me just make this quick point, because when I was when we were getting ready to do this today, I Googled just out of curiosity to see what is Jean Gomeshi up to these days? Can I even find him online? And I got to tell you, Bliss, I was so creeped out when I looked on Instagram and I saw current posts of him sitting in a studio. I don't know if it's a podcast or what the hell he's doing. And he's surrounded by young women that are working with him or for him. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, to me, this is insane after everything that came out about this guy. And it just makes me think, God, whatever comes of this moving forward, I just hope that this Adrian Nicholas, whatever the fuck his name is, I hope he's just never in a situation where he can continue to do this type of shit and get away with it. Sorry, Tid. I know you wanted to jump in and I cut you off before.
He's been hired by, as I understand it, the Persian, I don't know if this is the right word for it, but like Persian diaspora. And he's doing a podcast for that community.
Okay.
As far as I know. And there were definitely like some divided views on his situation. I'm not sure why. And same with Adrian, because there have not been charges, and the allegations that Noir made are pretty insane. You can't get any crazier than, you know, he drugged me, he confined me to a hotel room for 18 hours, he raped me, and he scalped me. Like, that's what she's saying, right?
And pretty intense, yeah.
As far as the scalping, I do have to say that originally, like, it was in the story. I've seen the photo. My editor in LA saw it, but we can't say for sure when she got that. And that was what happened at the very end before the article came out. You know, I was told, like, it's not in the hospital records. And I had to call Noir and say, we might not be able to put that in because it's not in the hospital records. She's like, yes, it is. And I go, it's not. I have those 40 pages. I have read them. It is not there. And she's like, yeah, it is. I go, okay, download Genius Scan. She downloads Genius Scan. She sends me this one pager. It's from, well, 13 years ago now. Private, like, notes from her social worker, who I did contact. And it said, you know, it's in the article, actually, like, Adrian Strong, like, who he scalped. Like, it's there. And it was like, I was in a cold case. I was like, in my head, I was like, oh, my God. Because that was a piece that's so horrific that I didn't have the actual corroboration for in the documents I had. So I sent them to the lawyers and the editors, and that's why it's in there. Like, everything, those lawyers, they're not going to let anything go in that I haven't backed, and I don't have the screenshots, the correspondence, the person to back up what the person said. Like, I don't think people really understand what goes into American journalism. They're so full of this nonsense that Trump, like, says, like, fake news. It drives me nuts, because I know, even for shorter pieces, what I have to do and how much corroboration and fact checking. These outlets, New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, New Yorker, Billboard, there's like ethics, there's lawyers. Like, we don't just wake up and write whatever we want. I know that's the refrain in the world. It's just not reality. People don't understand how it works in journalism. Like, you cannot do that. These lawyers worked to protect me and to protect them. That's what these lawyers were for. So I don't get sued and they don't get sued. That every line, that this was done for human interest, to protect the public, for public safety. And every sentence has been, like, it's as locked as it can be. Like, I have what I perceive to be evidence and backing it up. And I get nothing out of this. I don't want to spend 2 years of my life investigating an alleged sexual predator. I want to go to concerts and interview people about songwriting. Like, this is like, I have new respect for real investigative journalists, the people on the ground, the people that go to war zones, the people that go to murders, for cops and what they hear and what they see and what they have to get out of, you know, potential suspects and the photos they see. I'm not surprised that when I'm watching like a Dateline or 48 Hours, that officer says, this is my last case, I retired. Because it's in your brain. And I'm not doing it for personal gain. There is no personal gain. So
If anything, it's the opposite, right? Instead of personal gain, you're getting attacked publicly because, as you referenced, the attack on the media over the last 4 to 6 years between Trump and the conspiracy theorists around COVID that just believe that the media is just this couple of people that come up with a theory that with a plan, and then they just spew it out there to make the puppets dance. Like, it's so asinine what people actually think. I'm sorry, Tid, you've been cut off twice. Go ahead.
Right. No, my question is, what's stopping you though, Karen, from taking like these stories that you have now, and others, there's plenty of other ones like that we know about it, but what's stopping you from writing a fictional book, so to speak?
I probably could.
I mean, it sounds like you kind of got a couple of minutes on your hand here, if you know.
Look, I just watched Law and Order Toronto. I don't know if you just saw the most recent episode, but to me,
I saw your post about it. Yeah.
I was like, all right, that is very Gian Gomeshi-esque.
And well, that's one thing I've always said about all of those shows is when you watch them, you can literally go and go, oh, the story they're using this week is completely something that I just heard about in the news a couple of months ago.
Yeah, right? And that was ripped from the headlines. But that was very, I'm like, all right, well, that could be a Adrian-esque type of story. It could be a Jean, you know, type of story. I don't know what I'm going to do next. Those types of things, that's a lot of work. You know, I'd have to have someone come to me and say they want it than me just doing it. You know,
aside from what Tid and I do here on the Godfathers of Podcasting, you know that both of us have been involved in the wrestling world for a long time, and we're both involved with other projects, other shows that are wrestling related. And one of the stories, I don't know how much you know about this story, Bliss, but it's been in the news now for what, Tid, almost 3 years, surrounding the former chairman, the former owner of WWE, Vince McMahon. And initially it started off with stories of infidelity and women that he had paid to stay quiet. And it started off with stories of women that he may have assaulted. And then there was actually an FBI level investigation where they said, yes, they found that he had paid some people off with hush money and had NDA signed, but there was no evidence of any sort of impropriety. There was no evidence of any sort of like wrongful doing on his part. And then this news story came out a couple months ago about his former assistant who apparently he was sexually harassing for the better part of 2 years, gang raping, you know, doing all sorts of foul things to her. And it's unbelievable to me that, and like when you see some of the evidence, text messages and the claims that are out there, you go, well, this is indefensible, right? Like this is indefensible. And that, I think that's the reason why the board of directors at TKO, the company that now owns the WWE, said, yeah, goodbye, Vince. You have to go now, right? You're not affiliated with us anymore. Goodbye. Because they saw the evidence and they realized it's indefensible. But the amount of fans that come up and say shit like, well, why is this a civil case and not a criminal case? Why is she going after a payoff and not jail time? And for the record, based on what I've read of the allegations, and what I've heard whispers about the man for decades, I 100% believe all of the allegations. But does it give you
America? I'm not sure if it's state by state, but we are very fortunate in Canada that we have no statute of limitations on crime, right?
No.
It's not the same in America. So that could be it. Sometimes also, as we saw with the OJ thing, sometimes it's better to go for the civil case first, because then you kind of are trapped, you know, speaking whatever you might say. Actually, sorry, that happened with Cosby, right? So the civil case came first because he was talking about, didn't he start talking about drugging people in the civil case? And then, of course, that was used, I believe, in the criminal case. So, you know, there's all sorts of reasons. It's a tough thing. Sometimes people want to put it behind them, you know?
So. The court of public opinion in the world of social media, whether it's you know, this Nicholas Adrian Strong, whether it's Vince McMahon, whether it's Harvey, whether it's whoever, right? It's like the court of public opinion, they all weigh in and everyone is either outraged or they're a non-believer for a week. And then nobody gives a shit, right? And I know that the story that you wrote, you're still getting people that are in the industry or connected to the industry who are coming forward and saying, hey, great job. And by the way, I know someone else who is affected, or because they have a personal connection. But for the most part, like the 24-hour news cycle that we've been living in, it feels like it's turned into a 5-minute news cycle. Like, big stories like this don't seem to hold traction as long as they should anymore.
Weinstein's case conviction was actually overturned today, by the way.
Mm-hmm. I did not see that. Are you kidding?
Yeah, but there's still the charges or the conviction in California. But anyway, besides that, these individual stories might, you know, come and go because obviously people have lives and they have no connection. What doesn't go away is how you respond to them. So it grows and it becomes kind of a lesson. It becomes a lesson on what to do within your own community, within your own company. Maybe you work at a bigger company. Maybe you're starting a smaller company and you can have kind of zero tolerance, or have your HR and you put someone on leave and you do an investigation. You can have protections, like in the music festival world, you have a security person down that weird, you know, corner by the trees out in a music festival. You have someone at your venue knocking on that dressing room door every 15 minutes to check what's going on. If you see, you know, young girls going in there, you take responsibility as a club owner or manager, you know, or staff member, and you don't have this view of like, oh, that's the artist, we're going to let them do what they want. You go in. Everything okay? Are you okay? We have to take personal responsibility. You know, I got to say, I was just at a music conference today, and as I was walking out of the Stacked Market, there's a pop-up there. But it's L'Oreal, and I saw this actually at TIFF that they had, and there was like a lineup down the street for an hour because they are giving free products if you go through it. And it's I forget the actual campaign name, but it's how to identify sexual harassment. And there's such, it's a video kind of thing, and you go through, like, it says, is this sexual harassment, is this sexual harassment, and it's basically some guy coming up to a girl right behind them, you know, and like maybe whispering or going behind them or walking really super close or whatever it is. And yeah, that's sexual harassment, actually. You can't be a creep, you know? So all those things that, like, I grew up and it was okay for guys to do that, like pinch your bum as you're walking by, or, you know, all those types of things. Yeah, that's actual sexual harassment, believe it or not. Don't do it.
So let me ask you this then. Let me ask you this, because that's a really great distinction. And I think a lot of people out there, if you've never worked in the corporate world, if you're not exposed to all of this training that happens on a regular basis on what is and what is not sexual harassment, I think a lot of people aren't aware, right? And they'll, like, guys will say things like, oh, I was just being friendly, I was just being this or that. And it's sexual harassment by definition. So let me ask you this. Going through your personal experiences in your career, I find it really challenging to wrap my head around the fact that you haven't been sexually harassed repeatedly by rock stars and musicians and whatever. That must have been happening all the time.
I've been very fortunate. I've had some amazing male mentors and people I trust and value. I've had some creeps do creepy stuff. You know, I've also done stupid stuff in my teens. I remember being overseas and arriving in a city with a friend, and I was frustrated because she was talking to an old boyfriend of hers, and I was just getting bored, and I went walking by myself and I got lost. And this guy came along and said he would show me where the hotel was. And it, like, then an hour we're still walking, and like, you know, I'm like 16, 17, and, you know, nothing happened. Like, he was trying to force me to whatever. But like, it was fine. I've also gotten in cars with strangers, like guys that I met at whatever. I did this all when I was a teenager. I'm like, man, like, what was I thinking? And fortunately, I'm fine. I don't have any traumatic experiences, fortunately, but I fully understand that many, many women do. And there are many creeps out there, whether it's spiking someone's drink or, you know, also do not, if you are walking home on a dark street, don't walk behind a girl. Just be courteous. You know,
yeah.
Try and put yourself in their position. You know, if they're walking on one side across the street, don't be like walking behind them at midnight.
I was in my early 20s when someone taught me that lesson. A longtime friend of the show. I remember in the old days when Tid and I used to work at a downtown Toronto nightclub together. There was times when we would leave the club and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And, you know, you've had a couple drinks, so you're not about to get in a car and you're walking to someone's house for a get together. You're walking somewhere to have a bite to eat. And I remember a friend of mine, and he says to me, "Hey, let's cross the road." And I'm like, "Why?" "Because there's two girls walking in front of us." And I'm like, "So?" And I didn't get it. And then he like explains it to me after we cross the road and says, "They're going to think that we're trying to do something, especially you, Lurch." And he's like, "You cast a large shadow. That's scary to a girl." Like, yeah, I never thought of that. It never dawned on me.
I often, when I'm going to Budweiser stage, I park outside the Dufferin gates, and I'm usually with someone and we walk through. It's just easier than getting stuck on the lake shore coming out of that venue, and then we'll just walk through. So I did it by myself, meet someone at a show, not thinking that, oh, it's light when I arrive. When I come back, I'm walking 15 minutes through the empty CNE grounds, and there's less and less volume of people, and it's dark. And these guys are in a car, like, talking to me, with the window down. I don't know if they wanted direction. I don't even know what, but I was like scared shitless. Like, don't do that. You know, I don't know what they wanted, but why would you do that? You know, like, if it's innocent, don't drive up to a woman walking by herself through this desolate, dark area, which I should not have been doing, but I didn't think it was going to be like that, and ask for directions, you know?
Men are stupid. Let me apologize on behalf of men.
We're all of that same kind of age where when we were kids, we would do things like hitchhike. We would do things like walk a lot of places without... Listen, I've been cruised. I've watched cars when I was younger go by this way, turn around, go back this way, come back, and go up and down, and then eventually stop alongside of you. And, you know,
that was me. That was me.
It wasn't you. Trust me.
It was me. You know, you have a nice house.
I can personally tell you about a story where I was at a rap party for a TV show. And one of the female cast afterwards, very prominent figure, not outing anybody, decided that she wanted to take a better look at the tattoo on my back in the middle of the party. Literally started taking my shirt off during this party. But as a guy, a large dude, right? I've got to stand there and be like, this is cute. This is fun. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's a wild world we live in, Karen.
I mean, clearly that stuck with you, right?
Yeah.
That happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you're right.
Anyway. Well, we could talk about this stuff forever, I think, you know?
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Like, I thought we were just going to sit here and, you know, talk about what concerts,
for an hour. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought we were just going to keep roasting each other. You didn't call me ugly once this week.
It goes without saying, though.
I've never called you ugly.
Not in so many words, but the last time you were on this show, you literally said, You wish I was wearing an N95 mask so you wouldn't have to look at me.
Okay, that's just an opportunity. That's not real. That's not
what I'm saying. I told him he should take that bag and put it over his head earlier on this show alone.
That's a joke. You should do the unboxing, then put the box on. Anyway, yeah, that's just called an opportunity that you walked right into.
I'm never offended, so I don't care.
I'll just when the next person that drops out, just hit me up, you know?
As I've learned from my nearly 30-year friendship with my husband. My husband, okay? As I've learned from my relationship with him, you only roast the ones you love, so I'm not offended. Because if you're roasting someone that you actually can't stand, you're probably going to get punched in the face.
Nah. Who's going to punch me in the face?
I mean, it doesn't mean I'd live to tell about it, but I'd still punch you in the face.
I can't Karen, reach the face, so you know where this would land.
I know. You'd have to jump up on a chair.
So
listen, Bliss.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's been too long since we've done this. And as much as we goof on each other, I want you to know, because I did not reach out and say this to you personally. Cause I was thinking that you were getting slammed with feedback. I was blown away by the work you did on the Strong piece. It was fantastic. That is a career hallmark. That is definitely a career standout moment. You know, that is something that people will be talking about for years and years and years, and you should be extremely proud. I'm sure that you are. But I was blown away by the amount of work that went into that.
It was very, very long, and it's a hard read, and trigger warning for anyone that is going to read it.
It's extremely difficult read. Yeah. But it's extremely powerful, and it's something that everyone should check out. Like I said, we'll put a link to the article up on godfathersofpodcasting.com, and everybody can go check it out if they haven't seen it already. Bliss, appreciate it, man. Where are you going to be next? You going to a Jays game? You going to a rock concert? Where are you going?
What I came on here to say is that I was hoping one of you would take me to a Leafs game before we're... So get that together. There's only a couple of opportunities.
You you don't want it to be me. I'm a Bruins fan.
There is not one Toronto team that Tid backs. Not one. No, there isn't.
That saddens me.
No.
But yeah, if you're not going to get me the diamond encrusted hat, then take me to a Leafs game.
Yeah, they both cost about the same.
Yes. I think the diamond and gold hat would be cheaper.
It might be. Anyway, I'm going to go find your unboxing and see if you did it properly.
Thanks, Bliss.
Out of the box.
It's, you don't see that. You don't see that part. It was heavily edited because the original video.
They're like, look, it's in this box, and they've got the writing on the outside. I'm surprised.
The only part about the only part about the box is they put my damn name on the box.
Right.
That's really like it's embossed. Like that's really cool.
That's nice.
Right.
Yeah.
They sent like four of them. The other ones I threw in the garbage, but I'm keeping one. You gotta keep one.
I wish it was like one of those black boxes you find on an airplane. And the only reason we would have found it is because you crashed.
Oh. Ow. Ouch.
The second he started his sentence, I knew I was about to be fucking eviscerated. And I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
That was a good one.
All right. All right.
Thanks, Miss Bliss. Okay. Let's do this again. Let's do this again sooner, okay? Let's not wait another 120 something episodes.
37.
Yeah.
27? 27? Okay. All right.
I don't know. Whatever it was. We'll talk later.
Bye.
There she goes, everybody. Karen Bliss, music journalist, investigative journalist, looking for Leaf tickets. If you want to take Karen Bliss to a playoff game, email us info@godfathersofpodcasting.com and you got a date waiting for you.
What is it with all of you virtually Canadian people looking for handouts?
You're one of us.
I know, but I don't like I mean, come on now. Jeez.
We literally had a conversation last week about when was the last time you paid to go to an event. You don't pay for anything. You get freebies everywhere too.
Yeah, or I don't go.
Or you don't go. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's fair.
I usually don't go. That's the reality of it.
Coming up this weekend, you can hear Tid on Live Audio Wrestling. I will be on Sunday night's main event this Sunday. I had a chance this week to sit down and do a one-on-one interview with Bushwhacker Luke Williams. You talk about a man, Tid, with over 60 years in the wrestling business. He's 78 years old and his mind is still sharp as a tack. His memory is better than mine and he's unbelievable. He's got great stories. Just a wonderful guy to talk to. It's been years since I had a chance to sit down and chat with Luke. A lot of fun. What do you have coming up on your show this week?
Yeah, later. Earlier, I mean, Luke's name came up when I was talking to Cowboy Mike Hughes, and we were talking about how Luke was the booker at the time that he was down there in Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico,
I mean,
yeah.
Who's been around for a long time. And I mean, if you know anything about the sheep herders, you know how crazy they were when they were younger and how over they were, you know, when they became the Bushwhackers and in the WWE or WWF at the time. So that should be a great listen. Absolutely. Take a listen to that one. We've got some stuff coming up. We've got a few surprises. I don't even know who's going up this week or this weekend, to be honest with you, because we've got a few that we're trying to get through in that. But, you know, you can always check it out. Go over to The Law Live Audio Wrestling. Check it out. Go to Sunday night's main event. Check all of that stuff out. I mean, it's a good time to be us.
If you're in the Greater Toronto Area on Friday, April 26th, I will be at Super Kicked Pro Wrestling on Queen Street West at the Great Hall. Great show that's going to feature Showtime Eric Young, longtime friend of this show. He will be in the main event.
Who was just on The Law.
He was just on The Law like a week or two ago. So he will be in the main event of that show tomorrow night. Trey Miguel from TNA, former X Division champion. He will be there as well, taking on NWA women's wrestler Taylor Rising in that intergender match. There's all sorts of talent on this show, as well as a lot of the standouts from Super Kicked Wrestling. So go check it out. It's going to be a really good time. If you've never been to a Super Kicked show, it's like Ron Hutchinson was at the last one. Ron Hutchinson, of course, the man who trained Edge and Christian and Trish Stratus and so many others. And he had never been to a Super Kick show. He was at the last one and he said, oh, now I get it. A rock show that's a wrestling show. Like it is loud and it is just intense emotion. This is not like a show that you go and sit down in a chair with the kids and you just go, oh, that was good. Like this is a rowdy crazy environment, and it's so much fun. So if you want to check it out, they're at the Great Hall Friday, April 26th.
That's awesome. I remember when it was called Ringing Ears and I did it.
I was at those shows. Those were a good time. The Opera House is never the same. It's been a lot of fun, Tid. We got to wrap this up because we are way over time. But to everyone out there, thanks for hanging out with us. All, as always, you can email us info@godfathersofpodcasting.com or you can send us a text message 437-375-2000. You can look up Tid on all socials at Notorious TID. You can find me on Instagram. It says at Godfather Donnie, but that's incorrect. That's my old handle. It's actually at Donnie.DeSilva. I just realized that's been on there all episode, and that's wrong.
Better.
It's at Donnie.DeSilva. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Mm-mm. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me. I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Alright then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of here.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.